comes a show.
Hello, everybody. This is episode one of a new series called the Backcourt. It's just going to be me. And this series will just be me going deep dive into games, just with some more notes. I'm watching the entire game, not just looking at stats. For the first game we're doing is Brooklyn versus Philadelphia, 3-6. The game's technically going on still, but it's garbage time. I mean, they put in Cam Thomas. They put in their bums for Brooklyn. So I'm fresh. I have my ideas. I've watched the game. I understand why, like, what happened. And it wasn't because, I know it's going to look like a blowout on the stat sheet, but the reason Philadelphia won, which I'm assuming, there's 2.5 minutes left, but the reason Philadelphia won this game and won it by a sizable amount was not because of poor shooting. No, I mean, Brooklyn was hitting their shots for sure. It was because of a great defensive scheme where they were limiting the three-point attempts. So we're going to go quarter by quarter because that's how I wrote my notes. So first of all, immediately start of the game, Brooklyn comes out fast double teaming. And while Embiid is in a tough position where they love to play him on the high post or on the free throw line area, Brooklyn was in the middle of the court. That's a very important note. He's in the middle of the court. They're still trying to do a double team, which at some point seemed more like a shadow double team where they try and force the Embiid pass out, immediately scramble. What happened with this was that, later on, at first, Sixers were shooting terribly, and they were missing a lot of short, in my opinion, they were missing a lot of easy makes that made the score a lot closer than it was when it was downhill finishing for Harden or for Embiid. They just weren't getting it done at the start. But then eventually, after a Niang three, when he had the sidestep, Philly started to hit more and more threes. Offensively early for the Nets, they're more focused on Dinwiddie. He's their main ball handler, I'd say. And they loved the Dinwiddie-Claxton pick and roll at the start of the game. Ran it multiple times where Dinwiddie would try and get downhill because he had some pretty good quickness, honestly. The only problem is Claxton didn't look like tonight, this a great offensive post player. He looked like a great defensive who could come, come on the help side on defense and get a block, which he did multiple times. And then when the Nets were guarding Harden, their main goal, they were allowing a one-on-one. Usually Mikal was the main defender of that, just because obviously Harden's still, a great player. But when you're leaving Harden a one-on-one situation, especially in the playoffs, when you're looking at matchups and, you're in an off defense where you're scrambling at times, he was eventually going to start scoring. It was kind of inevitable, in my opinion. Harden wasn't the only guy looking for offensive buckets. What I learned about Philadelphia's offense is it's a little more stagnant. When they run sets, I think they do a great job. But guys like Tobias Harris, Harden, Tyrese Maxey, and Embiid, all of them, all their buckets are tough, hard makes, which are great. But you also want to run simple offense when you're playing against a team that's inferior, like the Nets, who, in my opinion, they have some. I think Mikal Bridges is a beast, and he's the new DeMar DeRozan when it comes to mid-range shooting. After what I just saw, but their regular season record was inflated due to the Kevin Durant team. So I don't. Another thing I noticed a lot though on offense for both teams was that a lot of floaters, and most of the time. It was successful at the start of the game. It was a really, efficient start of the game for the Nets, and the Philadelphia came around, but a lot of soft finishing. Not soft as in, weak, but more so touch finishing. Maybe, a slighter fadeaway. Maybe, many floaters, runners, but not a lot of stuff downhill because of the different rim protectors, which I think is going to be a key point because every team needs a rim protector. But still, these floaters were high percentage. And even from the get-go, it was the story of the game. It was rebounding. Philadelphia had many second-chance points opportunities, which is why they were still up even when they were shooting 27% from the field at one point, or from three. I don't remember which one. But and really, that's how they got their three-pointer started, because they would get threes only in two situations for the start of the game. And this was before the Harden three step back threes. And it was either a defensive scramble off an Embiid double where Embiid would kick out, make a skip pass, and then make a couple extra passes, hit a three. Or it would be off an offensive rebound, which later in the game, it almost got brutal to how bad it was getting with PJ Tucker just being out toughening the rest of the Nets. Honestly, though, what I saw mainly a reason for the defensive rebounding errors for the Nets, it looks like sometimes Claxton was just uninterested. There's one possession where offensive rebound goes, he's probably a foot away. He can contest for a rebound. And instead, he just stands there and just kind of like, arms aren't even up. He's just looking. I mean, you have to have a certain level of focus. And if I'm just looking at, you know, the main players like Mikal Bridges, I mean, when I was watching him play, he either loved to do his runner stuff, he loved to get on the move and take a shot, but he also loved when he was passing, which could lead to turnovers a lot, which he did have a couple, was he'd drive and then pass it back from where he came from. And it worked one time with Cam Johnson, but a couple times, he was just not only in that type of situation, but in many situations, he was just doing too much with his passing, trying to fit in a tight window where it just wasn't happening. So, I mean, that's the main thing. And then I made a quick note of Royce O'Neal guarding Niang, which just didn't make sense to me at the time. But eventually, Royce O'Neal, he would help on switches with Embiid. And I guess that was a matchup that Philly was looking for. But I think Royce O'Neal's a great defender. But and this is after the first quarter. Those are my notes. It was Philly was up by 5. But my main thing was Brooklyn's offense did look better. Like, they were well coached. You could tell that that Philly probably had the tougher shot, like, didn't look, they weren't shooting the ball well, and there's a lot more motion in Brooklyn's offense. So then, second quarter happens, and this is kind of when Philly starts to build their lead out even more, and it's based off bad defensive communication, and then Reed, who is the backup big for Philadelphia, had a big night. He started going off here, and coming off the bench for Embiid, when you already have a MVP candidate as your starting center, if you have a solid center just backing him up, that's huge, because you don't give enough time for Claxton. You either have to sub out Claxton so he can get rest to prepare himself for Embiid again, or you're going to gas him out with another great big, and he got it done late. Now, in the second quarter, when Embiid was out, their defensive tactic changed. Now, they did run a little 3-2 at different points, which, in my opinion, didn't really work because they're hitting the 3 so well. But they did send some delayed double teams, mostly on at Harden only. But it was during either an ISO. They did it once or twice, and they did it a couple times on pick and rolls where they'd press them up more. But I don't know if it would be considered a true double team. And then another thing I saw were a lot of turnovers. So the Claxton lobs, the lobs thrown like as an alley-oop lobs were terrible by the Nets tonight, led to a lot of turnovers. And then on the other part, you see Harden making, he's the assist leader in the NBA. He's making these great passes, being facilitators. But the Nets passing just isn't as good, which is a small detail that I think many will miss. But the lobs thrown, I think there were at least 6 lobs that were thrown. None of them completed. Okay. And so Mikal, this is still the first half, so Mikal had 20 points, and he was balling, but all of his points were basically from inside the arc. He obviously had a couple threes, but all of his production was off these really tough mid-range jump shots where he'd get up there on his jump shot, and he'd have to elevate over a guy, and it's like a lot of DeMar DeRozan-esque buckets. Since I'm from Chicago, I've seen a lot of his game. It just reminded me of him a lot. And then also in this quarter, though, this is when Harden started hitting. He hit three step-back threes, 9 points. And threes are better than 2. So when Mikal hits a 2, Harden answers with a 3. It's a +1 swing in favor of Philadelphia. And that happened a couple times. But, you know, also, the shot-making on both sides was great. It wasn't like the Nets were terrible. No, they were. It was a lead built slowly over time. There were a couple runs that the Philadelphia made, but usually they were responded to. If a guy on the Philadelphia hit a 3, and a lot of guys were hitting threes, it was really bad 3-point defensive defense on Nets' part. But when that did happen, a guy like Cam Johnson, a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie sometimes, Spencer wasn't hitting that many threes in my opinion, but a guy on Brooklyn would hit a 3 to return the favor. But yeah. And then my final note from the half was that Mikal does force a lot of turnovers when he's like trying to make passing plays. And that was a big thing that killed him. So third quarter, I noticed something that I think that a big advantage that Philadelphia has. So it starts off with Tobias Harris running horizontally across the top of the key kind of to receive it on the left wing. If you're facing the basket. So from the left wing, he gives a handoff to Tyrese Maxey, who then gets it to, who then feeds it to Embiid in the post on the left corner or left, like left-ish corner, kind of like between leftish wing corner for the post up. They did it, ran it multiple times. It gets, what happens is either, usually they know that the Nets are going to send a double. So when the Nets send the double, skip pass. And it's like, it's either an Embiid post-up where he's going to get the bucket or it's going to be a skip pass. And plays like that are just great. I think they need to stick with that and run more sets. Now, this came out of sideline. Wait, no, this isn't the one that was sideline out of bounds. That's another one. But this was also the quarter that Tobias Harris, I really realized that, you know, he had a big presence. They had a bunch of guys on Philadelphia that had good shooting nights. Tobias was one of them. He's a great, I'd say, third option, maybe at times fourth behind Tyrese Maxey. And he shot great. Up to this point, he was 3-for-3. And I just thought, you know, he was just going to keep balling, which he did. Still, Brooklyn was fighting to stay within reach. They were, I mean, it was between a 10 and 7-point lead at this point consistently. But P.J. Tucker was doing a great job with offensive rebounding and they, you know, bring in the toughness that Philly seemed like they needed last year. And Embiid was just getting it done. A lot of his points per game was inflated because of free throw line shooting. I didn't think he played, like, that well. Now, he had 26 points. 11 of them were off free throws, which is just... and then at this point in the game, still the third quarter, but there were 14 points off second chance rebounds. Second chance points... 14 second chance points for Philadelphia, 17 points off turnovers, and 13 off free throws. So that's about 44 points, I think. That was half their score at the time. Was off the, in my opinion, the mistakes. The free throws you can count as the what Philadelphia did good, but it was more Brooklyn making mistakes, making stupid mistakes like turnovers and bad defensive rebounding. When if you're the lower seed, you have to do those things. But I feel like Philadelphia, while a top seed, is going to, that will be how they get through the first round. It won't be because of their stars, which they do have. They do have stars that are better than Nets. It will be because of their rebounding. But at this point still, the doubles that have been being sent on Embiid were starting to work a little bit more. They were causing turnovers. But the big difference with Philadelphia's turnovers and the Nets' turnovers were that Philadelphia's turnovers were dead ball. So it was usually thrown out of bounds. While the Nets, it was live ball. So that's what led to the transition offense that played in. And transition offense in the playoffs is so big because a lot of it is half-court stuff. So when you can get an easy 6-8 points off, you know, just transition layups, that's a easy boost. And other than that, I mean, I just wanted to make a note that Cam Johnson was also getting buckets inside out. And Jalen McDonald's of the... of the Philadelphia 76ers got the best drip of the game award because he was rocking some arm sleeves. I don't want to recall that. I just want to get into the fourth. Now, the fourth, this is where, like, you could tell it was going to be a blowout. Philly was just out hustling. Just more, and based off offensive rebounds, based off taking charges, just, it looked like a bunch of high, in the best way possible, it looked like they had the hustle of like a super gritty high school team while having the talent of an NBA roster, which is just dangerous. And especially in the playoffs, you want your guys to, you know, make that extra effort. And Philly seems dangerous. Like, they had a really impressive game one. Obviously, it's one game, but looked really good. Paul Reed, again, he just kept balling. Now, it started getting to garbage time. So some of them, I don't take all of it as seriously, but Paul Reed's going to be a big factor in this series. And he'll probably be a kind of like a Bobby Portis role, in my opinion, focusing more on the rebounding side than the scoring side than Bobby Portis did for the Bucks. But I could see him definitely playing that role where he comes off the bench, he provides some bench scoring, because he did have a couple great rolls to the basket with Harden earlier in the game in the second quarter where he got 4 points easily just when they were trying to double Harden. It's just an inside-out guy, a guy that can go inside to make it harder for them teams to guard. And then, again, just more terrible lob passes. A lot, that was a big theme, like turnovers. So finishing off the episode, I think that this game can be settled down by Brooklyn made a lot of mistakes. And while Philadelphia didn't necessarily shoot the best, they capitalized off the mistakes of Brooklyn. I think that, you know, Philadelphia won the game off some hustle plays, but it was more that Brooklyn lost. I think this could have been much more competitive. I think this should have been a 5-point game, but turnovers led to a third, like, Brooklyn's mistakes led to a third of the points scored by Philadelphia. One third was scored by just really tough ISO buckets, and another third was scored by decent offense. Brooklyn's points, I mean, Mikal Bridges looks like a star. I know he's, you know, going to be the best player on a team that loses in the first round, in my opinion, which that's what I think is going to happen. Probably, I don't know, I could see it going in six, but I still think he's a star. And I don't know. Looking at the East, I don't know if Philadelphia will be able to compete since they did depend on rebounding. But you never know. Anything can happen in this league. So that is the first episode of this will be called The Final Whistle. Just a little game breakdown, trying to go more in depth. I haven't even looked at the stats yet, so I could be, I mean, I'm not 100% sure, like, factually what the turnover ratios are. But the main themes of this game, quick rundown, main themes. Brooklyn turnovers off bad passing, which is lobs or just forcing. Philadelphia's defensive scheme of limiting three-pointers was incredible. Shot the three ball much better than Brooklyn, which led to the separation. And then Philadelphia's hustle then makes it even harder for the star power of Brooklyn to, you know, stick with them because they can't win off hustle. And yeah, they won the hustle battle, which is another big factor that I don't know if I talked about enough, but it was a major reason why Philadelphia won. So that's it. That was the first blowout of the playoffs, since it was the first game of the playoffs, or the second game, I forget. Yeah, I think first. But still, it was a good game, in my opinion. I think the first three quarters were good, but the fourth quarter was bad. That is it. That was the first episode of The Final Whistle. Goodbye.